Hey everybody, welcome to the Dissecting Liberty podcast. Today we have a returning guest, Theodore of Crowdfunded Government. What's up, man?
Hey, Cotton, Liberty Zero. Thank you so much for having me. How's it going, gentlemen?
It's going great.
Going awesome.
Enjoying the married life.
Oh, yeah, buddy. nothing but smooth sailing ahead.
There you go.
No, actually, legitimately, congratulations, man. Yeah. Marriages are how strong communities will be formed, and eventually you have a family, and you're doing your part to make sure that there will be liberty available for my children in the future.
Yeah,
well, that's the dream. That's the hope. That's the plan.
Well, I don't want to diminish Zero's recent accomplishment, but I'm enjoying a Samuel Adams Boston Lager.
Hmm.
So
why you gotta make it?
I am actually probably top 20 beer of all time is the winter version of Sam Adams. Is it called Winter Lager?
Well, I gotta give a shout out to my buddy David from Mises U, who couldn't take the beer he didn't drink back on the plane with him, so he gave it to me, and it was the first Sam Adams I ever had, and it's pretty good, not bad.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a surprisingly rich flavor for being such a meme, you know, mainstream beer, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, we haven't. When was the last time we recorded, Zero?
At least 2 weeks.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you guys just about went back to back with me.
No, we recorded a lot in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You guys said you were doing a blitz and yes. Okay. So there was actually a lot of stuff in the hopper still potentially.
Yeah. There's a bit there.
I think we have.
Here I am pushing myself to the front of the line.
It's all good. We got to keep that content coming out.
And so I just got Liberty Zero got married. I just got back from Mises U, and so when we got a message from Theodore saying he had some big news, so we had to hop on the line, and we're excited to hear about this big news.
Yeah, and neither one of us have. I mean, at least for me, I know.
No, I have no clue.
No idea what this is. Like, I know that some episodes have been released with other podcasts, but yeah, we haven't. We have no idea what this is about. So,
I appreciate you guys not looking into it yet because I wanted your honest, unfiltered opinions. And I can assure you, I wouldn't have bothered you guys. We just like recorded last month. I wouldn't have bothered you guys if I truly didn't believe that there was some content that I feel that your listeners would benefit from and you guys would benefit from thinking about because it will definitely involve you as well.
Yeah, ooh. Sweet. Now we're eager to hear about it and give you some feedback if that's what, I'm sure that's what you want. So
that's what I want. As you know, I love whenever people tell me why I'm wrong so that I can change my opinion and stop being wrong.
Yeah.
So the good news is there's no change to crowdfunded government in the sense of the philosophy. I'm still a believer in ending involuntary taxation, voluntarily crowdfunding government. That's all cool. So guys, don't panic. I'm here with good news.
Okay.
I am here to tell you guys that after surveying the landscape, so I've been doing Twitter for almost 5 years with this crowdfunded government parody account, essentially parody account, right? It's so laser focused on one mission. Sometimes I forget that I'm an individual. I sometimes just embrace the identity and the shtick and I just run with it, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Been doing this a while. I have bad news and good news. So I would like to start with the bad news so that we can slowly build up to the good news at the end.
Okay. That's generally a good strategy.
Yeah, let's end on a high positive note and start it out with a very terrible idea that I have been developing. Essentially, I pay attention to the landscape, guys. I watch what's happening with people, opinions, power in society, and I develop opinions about what to do next or where is good or bad. And I can tell you guys, I now have a change to a small section of crowdfunded government involving partisanship or the lack thereof of political opinions. Because crowdfunded government, my idea originally was, anybody ideas are good. Any opinion that out there is good. Any program is good as long as you will pay for it. I don't have a political opinion regarding what you do or how you do it. I just want you to voluntarily choose what to do with your money, as you guys may recall.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, third party politics, gentlemen.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Third party politics has caught my attention. And I'm noticing I'm noticing a few things.
All right, let's hear them.
Well, let's just go over the obvious one. The first one about third party politics is I look at all of the political offices in the United States, and I look at the number of third party registered members currently in power. And out of those partisan offices, if you guys had to make a guess, what percentage of politicians are Republican or Democrat versus any other third party?
Hmm. We're talking like local and
every,
state?
Yeah, every okay. office. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
Does independent count as third party?
If it's a registered third party, you know, like the registered independent party.
Okay.
Although I guess in this example, somebody who's absolutely a nothing would still, I think the number's not going to change.
Okay. Then I'm going to say 6%.
Yeah, I was going to go with 7. Yeah, I was going to go with 7%.
In my head, on every podcast, I've been saying 1 or 2 and people are not batting an eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not surprised, but.
Because it's like, if you go down like all of the different legislators and all the different dog catchers and just everybody, it seems like a lot of these positions that allow you to run as partisan, if not 99% of them, appear to be going red or blue as opposed to any other color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have now identified that there are lots of people in power that are not third parties. So I then look at the third parties. And I ask myself a question, and this is not a trick question. I'm genuinely interested in your answer on this one. If you have a hypothetical on your left, a traditional red-blue politician slash voter slash party supporter, right? You're just general red-blue, okay?
Yeah.
And your right hand, you have a third party member or politician, blah, 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 whether it's libertarian, green, reform, independent, constitution, right? So you got these two archetypes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which of those archetypes do you guys think has better command of political philosophy on average, more information on average, more logically put together political opinions on average?
No, the third party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's not a trick question. I just want to make sure everybody kind of can agree with the logic so far, which is that these people involved in third parties are generally, and this is my opinion, I don't have statistics, I'm just here to give an opinion as usual. People involved with third parties are generally going to be more politically educated because it's difficult to find out about third party. You have to have a real opinion. Then you have to form your opinion. Then you have to find people with common opinions. If you know what would be easier? Just choosing red or blue as opposed to all of these steps involved in third party. So clearly, it's the harder route. It's the one that, to me, indicates the person has done a lot more critical thinking on average. Of course, there's going to be exceptions, right? But this is an opinion that I've come to.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right, so we're slowly building the pyramid here. So in my opinion, the vast majority of political offices are a virtual guarantee that they're either going to be Republican or Democratic. There's also incredible political capital being spent on third-party politics, and now maybe we can start to synthesize based on these facts. I believe that people involved in third-party politics are wasting their time because they're never going to get the power to make any differences in the world.
Okay.
Yeah, that's generally true.
That's
yeah.
a, But that's a severe departure from my traditional approach, because traditionally I would have said, well, you know, I can't get involved in politics because I don't want to be seen as taking sides. I never want to say, oh, Republicans are dumb, Democrats are dumb, Libertarians are dumb, Green are dumb, right? I never want to do that. Why would I want to alienate people?
Right.
Because there's a huge problem, guys. Incredibly smart people who are miles ahead in terms of political philosophy and reading than I am will never, ever have a remote chance of being in office. They're going to spend their entire lives working for parties and running for offices, and they are never going to be the change they want to see in the world.
Yes. Mm.
And I don't think this is necessarily controversial. Overall, many people have this opinion. They share it on Twitter all the time. But I don't see anybody really trying to do anything about it. I think everybody's just kind of like, well, yeah, you get a lot of smart libertarians, you get a lot of smart Green Party, you get a lot of smart reform because they think about what they want and they have a principle to get there. And that's just how it is. A lot of smart people end up in the third parties doing nothing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
No, I'm done with it. No, in my opinion, politics is power. The political process is designed to take the democratic vote of the people, place representatives into the republic, and then execute the levers of government. So if that's the point, if you're just going around driving from city to city, doing radio show to radio show, and then debating with a bunch of other people who have no chance of ever winning political office, what the hell are third parties doing?
Yeah. Like, are you building up to that you just like got blackpilled when Joe Jorgensen was nominated?
I will say that last week was the breaking point when I saw what libertarians were arguing about, and Joe Jorgensen was jumping right in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolute bonkers last week in regards to that the Libertarian Party wasn't even trying to win office. They were arguing with each other about who's more socially aware or not, or who's racist or not.
Yeah.
What the hell are you, not you guys, what the, you know, I'm saying this to party. Yeah. What the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah, that was incredible.
So by no means am I a libertarian. As you guys know, my opinions are not formed based on the non-aggression principle, and I would never pass a purity test because of how pragmatic I am in regards to, I have a lot of non-libertarian beliefs when designing crowdfunding government. So by no means am I a libertarian, but obviously I have a lot of friends who are libertarian because taxation is theft. Most of us can high five over that. So here I am. Guys, I am disgusted by anybody who's spending any time trying to progress the ladder in third party politics. And listen, complaining is great. What should we do about it?
Right.
That's a very good question.
What ideas can you guys think of?
Yeah, that's what I'm dealing with. Cause like, I know the person that I see taking the strongest stance right now is Pete Quiñones, who has completely divorced himself with the Libertarian Party and is really embracing agorism now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's the route, but before all this stuff, I thought that the using the party as an educational platform was better than agorism. But I don't know if I believe that anymore. I've just become very disheartened.
Yeah, and I'm kind of leaning towards that too. Like every time that, like for instance, I had to go to the grocery store today, and I really hate wearing the mask,
mm-hmm.
and like it just about killed me to go in there. And then afterwards, like I spent like 20 minutes being depressed about it.
Yeah. when you go to the grocery store and wear your mask, is the grocery store weird? Like the vibe is just odd.
Yeah, it's
just me.
Yeah, and I'm
no, you're feeling a vibe, dude. It's out there. It's judgmental, looking at who's not wearing a mask or not wearing it properly. There's people, they're very worried if you get in their space. Everything mm-hmm. is changed in the past everything's changed in the past 6 months. This is not the world that I knew, for sure. I mean, there's a vibe.
Yeah, and so I was just to finish up this point is basically, as I'm thinking about it, it's like, man, do I need to get involved in a co-op so that I really just minimize the amount of time that I spend in these spots where I have to wear a mask, you know?
Yeah.
So this is leading you to a more independent, much smaller amount of people in your community and trying to find people who really connect with your views as opposed to you trying to get a bunch of other people to connect with your views.
Always.
Yeah. Basically,
All right. So I'm very glad at what you said. And I'll start with Mr. Quinones. Obviously, he is the reason why I'm Theodore Quinoa. So I have tremendous respect and admiration for him. Unfortunately, he's had a lot of stuff going on, and I reached out to him. He has a ton of stuff. If you don't believe he has a ton of stuff going on, check out his feed right now. He's been up to some incredible.
when I was in Auburn, I met him. And there were a ton of people that were like, hey, Pete, you know, can you come on my podcast? And he said, without even like what the podcast was, he was like, I will message me, but please wait 2 weeks because I can't keep up with it all, you know. So he's definitely.
Yeah, I'm never one of those guys. I'm never one of those guys who gets insulted whenever people say no to me. First of all, because it takes balls to say no. Yeah. And I always respect it whenever somebody does. And yeah, if I felt like he was somehow disrespecting me or something, you know, I would let everybody know that I don't respect him. So he was literally the top of my list, like literally the first person I reached out to and literally waiting before I even record with anybody else, just in case he had the availability, because he has such, like you guys are saying, such a turn on and such a pivot, such a presentation on the third party system.
Yeah.
So anyway, unfortunately it didn't work out, and that's okay. Hopefully one day I'll get a chance to record with him, because obviously I'm a huge fan. Agorism, very good answer, actually. The more podcasts that I've done, because agorism to me, there's a reason why it's mocked on Twitter, as I think Jared's been saying it recently. It's like, you're not growing jalapenos is not going to end the state.
Yeah.
But that's a hot take. That's not a real opinion on agorism.
Yeah.
Right.
It's easy in, you know, 180 characters, whatever, 280 characters to take a crap on something, you know, by giving a half of an opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so the great thing about these podcasts that I've done is a lot of the hosts are agorists or agora curious. And I've really been enjoying learning more about it, because I feel like agorists would be a great complement to a crowdfunding government system. Basically, if people want to participate, there'd be a bunch of people participating in the state. And if there was very strong agorism in the culture, there'd be a ton of people existing outside of the state, because they've taken care of their finances and their food and their family without relying on the state.
Yeah. It's all about increasing your personal liberty.
Yeah. So to me, agorists, even though a lot of agorists don't even want to talk about something like a crowdfunded government because they're just so focused on divorcing themselves from the state, they are fellow travelers in the sense that they and I in 1,000 years would be best of pals, because I'd be over here not bothering them over there.
Yeah.
So agorism is a very compelling theory to me, and I really enjoy it. And whenever people do mock it, I do try to stop in and just let them know that, you know, as long as we're joking here, that's great. But realize that people who are trying to be self-sufficient are really going to be part of the solution in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, to me, agorism isn't as sexy. Oh, by the way, agorism, agorism. I hate that Sal, if Sal would call it agorism, the debate would be over.
Yeah,
he's literally the guy, and then he says, well, he learned it from some even, you know, even more influential philosopher, he said he heard somebody say it, and that's it. But gosh darn it, dude, it's just agorism. I had like a goal.
Sounds, you know, so much better if you say agorism.
You know what, in liberty and philosophy, why can't we even agree on how to pronounce things?
Yeah.
It's like, come on, you know, it's like, can't even agree. Can't even agree on pronunciation. So I love the idea of agorism. It's just, to me, it's not as sexy because I like the splash. I like the, you know, breaking the system from within. I like the, I never thought of that. Whoa, head explode, right?
Yeah.
You know, I love the fight. So that's the reason why I don't promote agorism personally, or I don't participate personally, is just because an agorist is somebody who waves goodbye as the ship is sinking, and I am bailing and putting out the fire and trying to plug holes, right? This ship is going down, and I am not going to let it sink, boys. Listen, we got to do what we can to save it.
Right, right. Yeah, that's definitely you.
So I just wanted to briefly address agorism because I was going to, because it's such a good answer to some of these problems that we've located with mainstream politics versus third party politics being worthless.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to address that, guys. I now have my nuclear bomb if you're ready.
All right.
Okay.
Drop it.
It's time. Put on your glasses. my goal, stated written goal. I would like to end third party politics in this country by the end of the third quarter.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Oh, okay. How are you going to do that?
All right. Well, first of all, let's reframe my goal because that's ridiculous. But, so is voluntarily crowdfunding government. Like I say, it's a 1,000-year idea. It's not like I expect even within 50 years to have a large portion of any government being voluntarily funded. I mean, it will be a slow climb as it proves popular and proves feasible with technology and laws slowly get changed. So similarly, my approach on third parties would be, my goal would be to end it by the third quarter. But as you'll find out shortly with my plan, that's not really what I'm going for. But a dramatic goal gets people's attention is what I realized.
Okay, makes sense.
So just so you guys know, I'm not off the deep end. I'm just trying to put some fire and have some fun. But that's a nuke, you know, you drop that nuke and people are like, what?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're not off the deep end, then I don't think you can be on the podcast. I'm sorry to say, man.
I'm off, buddy. It's Adult Swim and I am out here on my own. So what do I see as a solution to this? Well, how do you solve third parties? If you want to eliminate them, what do you do? Well, first of all, I have an interesting observation, and I think we're going to have a confluence of events that makes it possible for me to really disrupt third-party politics. We have hundreds of Liberty podcasts out there in the wild right now, recording thousands of hours per month. Does that seem about right?
Probably, yeah.
That's maybe a little bit underestimated there.
Yeah, I mean that's what's crazy how big the market is here. So there's a ton of hours of recording time coming up in November, big election. So what do we think is going to happen on a lot of these Liberty podcasts?
Talking about the election.
We're going to be talking about it. We're going to be having libertarian and other third party politicians on there to try to spread their message and have long form discussions instead of sound bites to try to earn people's support. Here's my idea. My idea is, if you guys ever have a third party politician, or if any listeners know of any third party politicians going on any other shows, see if they would be interested in just allowing a skeptic to have 5 minutes of questions, because I realize that I have questions that I don't know what the answers are. And anytime I have questions that need answers, I am extremely interested. Question number one, what the hell are you doing talking but not getting power? How do you think that makes a difference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Question number two, what the hell are you doing?
But here's my, I'm going to be the fuddy-duddy in the room.
And
here's my issue with that is, let's say hypothetically Pete has on Joe and he agrees to let you or another skeptic come in and just have their 5 minutes. Joe isn't going to like that. That's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that might also hurt his reputation and may make it more difficult for him to have people like her on again. So.
Mm-hmm. And if whenever topics make people uncomfortable.
I think I see where you're going with this.
Whenever topics make people uncomfortable, should we talk about them or should we avoid them? If somebody doesn't want to be your friend because you might not always agree with them, is that really your friend?
Well, I agree with you, and I think uncomfortable topics are some of the only topics worth talking about, but that's also not politics. Like, the entire point of politics is just to mass produce like aphorisms that you can put on a bumper sticker, whether that is two-party politics or any third party.
Yeah, that's a fair point, but I believe, and especially because third-party politicians should be used to the question, why are you running as a blanketarian?
Yeah.
As opposed to a Republican who likes to smoke weed. Right? So they have an answer. I'm ready to hear it. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be as snarky or as much of a jerk as, I mean, if I was actually given the opportunity to speak to a politician, definitely I would prepare a well-phrased question to try to get at this power dynamic without mocking somebody.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's the direction that I want to go. And you guys are right. So I'm probably not going to get access on bigger shows to politicians because the host is going to do a calculation in their head and say, you know what? I want future politicians not to feel like they're about to get railroaded and pass on opportunities to talk to me.
Right. Yeah.
So I get that. I understand that. But my point remains, which is if I have the opportunity just to question some politicians running for third parties and some of them think about what I said later on, you know, it haunts them at night, like three nights later, they wake up in a cold sweat at 2:45 in the morning. Like, what the hell am I doing?
Okay.
Well, I have another question.
Sure.
So I think most of us at this point, like, especially in the libertarian crowd, would readily admit that the Libertarian Party is pretty useless and as a useless party, it's still the most useful of all the third parties. Excuse me. So, you know, I do think it's useless, but what, how does getting rid of the third parties further your goal?
Great question, because like an altruist who is just out trying to help society, which I am, right? I'm spending a tremendous amount of time on a stupid idea that's never going to happen in my life, trying to get people even thinking about ending taxes, right? So I spend a lot of time doing this. What's in it for me? Well, with crowdfunded government, truly nothing. Truly nothing is in it for me because I have no political ambitions. I would decline any office if elected, right? I'd refuse to serve. My goal is purely administrative as a philosopher. So what's in it for this whole third party idea is I look at the landscape of all these smart people who have really, really good ideas that if they were to just simply register as an R or a D, flip a damn coin, dude, heads matter. Take half of your party's position and run with it. You have to. Take the other half and start inserting your take, your version. And guess what? Some of them are going to get elected. Not all, not many, but some. And some of them are going to start being the dog catchers and the councilmen and the mayors under an R or a D banner, but they can slowly start to implement some of these ideas and have real power. So that's the argument that I make, is that as an idea, a third party is worthless. I can't point to any example, and I'm happy if anybody can, of political change that has happened because a naked man ran across a stage and eight people were arguing on a stage and none of them had a chance to be president.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is my plan and this is my vision. I want this political capital redeployed to mainstream politics so that we can actually get some people in power. And then what's in it for me? I mean, a lot of them would be more open to a crowdfunded government idea than traditional politicians.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it here. And like you said, like, a libertarian is never going to get elected to like a serious office. And in fact, like, in terms of like a libertarian who runs as a Republican or a Democrat, you know, even like, okay, let's say that they win that, like that election somehow, right? Like the next time around, like if you're in a serious office, like a, like if you actually get elected to like the U.S. Congress or whatever, I mean, obviously you're gonna, like the Republican Party, like let's say, because that's probably the most likely choice for like a libertarian.
Yeah,
like they're gonna try really hard. They're gonna throw a lot of money at the process for the nominating. Yeah, like the primary process or whatever.
Yeah, I have a slight counterpoint to that, and I guess it's multifaceted. First of all, I would just say Ron Paul on the debate stage.
Which
yellow-pilled millions of more people than a Libertarian Party ever yellow-pilled anybody.
Yeah, that's very true.
And at no point did Dr. Paul Dr. Paul ever sacrifice his true principles, but it is fair to say that every once in a while he would go along to get along. You know, for example, voting for the omnibus bill because it brought the money to his district that they had contributed.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So he didn't just go in there and, as a libertarian, fold up his hands and go, I'm voting no on everything because government is bad. No, he said, listen, I'm going to vote no when it makes sense. I'm going to vote yes when it makes sense. I'm going to toe the party line when it makes sense. But believe me, I'm not sacrificing my principles.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and did the Republican Party attempt to get him out? Did they mudsling? Yes. Yeah, a little bit. The establishment definitely mudslinging as best they could against him, right? They tracked down the 1985 Ron Paul letter that wasn't even written by him.
Yeah.
And somebody had snuck like one line into a 37 paragraph story. So, yeah, you have a good point. However, the counterpoint is, first of all, that success. Another counterpoint would be politics is about power and money. And if you're telling me that if we spend 5 years canvassing every local office and getting as many people who were going to run third party to run for local office instead, if you're telling me in 5 years you don't think that that's going to be a noticeable blip on the radar, well, hey, then I'm wrong. But I believe there would start to be caucuses. There would start to be organizing within the parties to indicate that there is a new breed here. That new breed is something better, and it's raising more money. And it's getting more votes. And at that point, if my theory that politics is about power and money, what do you guys think happens?
Oh, can you repeat that question?
That's fine. I know I talk a million miles an hour, guys. You can always ask me to slow it down. Let's just say for 5 years, everybody agreed. Joe Jorgensen got on YouTube and said, you know what? I heard Theodore Quinoa. I agree. I am stepping down, and I encourage everybody else to do the same thing. I'm turning in my card, and starting next year, we are all running for local office. In 5 years, do you think that that makes a noticeable blip on the national stage or the state stages having so much success locally?
Yeah. I would.
If politics is about money and power, and you start getting money and winning power, why would the establishment start to turn against you? Wouldn't they be forced to either work with you or you become the establishment?
Yeah.
So that's what I got, guys.
Yeah, and something that this is one of the questions that I had early on, but I guess I kind of answered it in my mind. You were saying like, okay, you're trying to convince all these third party candidates, right? And my first thought was like, well, you're assuming that they're not psychopaths.
That's why I wanted to start the discussion, that I truly believe them to, they have to be incredibly intelligent people.
Right. And the thing is like, and so like, as I thought more about it, I realized that if you're running third party, you're probably not a psychopath because you're not going to win. And, or, if you are, you're just not very smart. So, but so yeah, I think that, you know, a third party candidate would be more likely to be principled and more intelligent, at least in that way. And so, like, I think that, you know, trying to convince them is like far more, like, it's actually fairly feasible, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I would just like it to get to the point where every single time that they get interviewed, other people start copying my style, and they always include some version of the question, why would you prefer to talk instead of win?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Well, how would I win? Well, you would rip up your yellow card, flip a coin, get a red or a blue card, and get to work. Go run for dog catcher. Join the party. Find out which parts of the platform you agree with and which planks you want to modify. Get to work.
Yeah. Huh.
So well. I see it as a meme. I see it spreading like wildfire. And I see some of these future podcasts being like million views when this weird Theodore guy asks a question and a couple of politicians go
yeah. And that's, I mean, I'm trying to, that's something I kind of want to see like in action. So I don't know if we politicians aren't really like interviewing politicians isn't really in the scope of the show so far. But I mean, I would be interested in seeing like what could be done, you know, with talking.
Yeah, that's the reason I said it. Yeah, that's the reason why I said it can involve you if you want, but I will make it very clear to you that I've told this to every podcast that I'm not insulted if you found this to be a bad idea for your show. Because some shows aren't set up for it. And like we also said, some hosts are going to err on the side of civility and they don't want to be that gotcha moment that I'm trying to deliver.
Right. And then, you know, you like, as long as you, you know, I don't think it's a problem as long as the host informs their politician guest, you know, that you're going to have someone on, he's going to ask them some novel questions.
We have a guy who's fairly interested in the liberty movement but has some questions about why the Libertarian Party is the best path forward. Would you take a question or two from him? He's promised to be very civil.
I don't see that going well. I think like a better I think a better tactic would be to for you to come up with some questions and then the host asking those questions.
Yeah, but you guys know I'm a relentless self-promoter.
No, I know. I know very well. I mentioned the Cotton Report while in Auburn maybe 15 million times. So I understand.
Hey, dude, come on, man! It's really cool. I'm excited for what you got going on. And like we talked, I would be happy to contribute if I hadn't even written a blog post for my own blog in 3 years.
Yeah, there are a bunch of people in that boat. I got that. I've heard.
So
that
quite it's. A I'm bit. Sorry. I have 50 articles listed on my website ready for me to read and write, you know, 4 to 6 paragraphs about. And the only thing that matters to me is talking and doing these podcasts. As you guys can tell, that's the direction that I feel I've reached the most people. And when I get a chance to talk, I mean, I'm a terrible writer. I'm a technical writer by trade. So writing to me is about facts, not flow.
Yeah.
Somebody once said that my blog looked like a broken robot. Which is
sounds
fine.
Like an engineer.
Yeah, I mean, it's my trade is to write clearly, start with facts, and then write a process based off of that. That's what I do.
Mm. Yeah.
So I do apologize that I may not be able to help something as cool as the Cotton Report, because I think you're going to be finding a lot of success and interested parties as you go on with it.
No, no worries, man. I got other Cotton Report things in the hopper.
So that's the thing, so.
Zero,
it's the thing is just
something?
My skill set is
oh yeah, I was You guys both know who Jason Stapleton is, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so back in the day when I was a young libertarian and I would listen to his show, and now his show has taken a kind of a different turn. And I stopped listening around the time that he had a beef with Pete Quinones. As I was sitting here, I remembered something that he said one time, and it kind of it relates to this subject in that he said that if he were to ever run for political office, like he would never run as a libertarian. And then later he joined the LP, I believe. But at one point he did say that like he would only like run as like a Republican because he wants to, you know, he'd want to win. And
did you say he had a dust up with Quinones?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a fight with Pete. He had a fight with Tom Woods. He had a fight with Dave Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. I was just about to joke that the two people that you should never pick a fight with are Pete Quinones or Dave Smith. Like, don't. Because if they're going to, if you think you have a point on them, you are toast. I guarantee you, you're toast.
Oh, and then Eric July, apparently.
Oh, that's a smart idea. Yeah, then get Eric July in the mix. That's real smart, dude.
Did you see that? Apparently, some guy, there's a Facebook group or like a Facebook page called Fakertarians, and then they call out people like Dave Smith for,
yeah,
you know, interviewing
what nonsense,
Christopher Cantwell or what, you know, whoever, right?
Yeah,
it's just a bunch of Tom Woods calls them the Loser Brigade, right? And anyway, so apparently one of these clowns got on like a stream with Eric July, and just Eric July absolutely like just mauled him. And at the end, the guy's like, he just admit, and he's like, well, you bested me this time. Because mm-hmm. he's left to the last question that Eric July asked him is like, and what of it? And he's talking about Christopher Cantwell being on like Dave Smith's show or something like that. And then the guy's just like, he's got nothing.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
If y'all don't mind, I'll kind of change the subject a little bit. I have to apologize to Liberty Zero because we were having a conversation a while back. Zero, you might not even remember this. And you were reading A Renegade History of the United States by Thaddeus Russell.
Ooh.
And you were telling me about it, and I wasn't mocking it, but I was like, I expressed some like disbelief in how good the book is, because I'm not a super big fan of Thaddeus Russell, but I was introduced to him based off his views on postmodernism, and I recently read the first two chapters of A Renegade History, and I saw him, he did such a great job in Monopoly on Violence that that Renegade History is really good. And I was kind of, I don't know, I was skeptical about it when I shouldn't have been. But I mean, it's awesome. I'm excited to read more of it. I also read, I listened to the audiobook while driving to Auburn, The New Right by Michael Malice.
Oh, man. Cow.
Ooh.
What a fantastic book.
I need to re-listen to that one.
Oh, man. It's so great.
You guys are aware that on the top of my Twitter page was the one time that Michael Malice talked to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
2017. I didn't know exactly who I was talking to. Like, if you look back, the conversation is really weird because I didn't know how sarcastic he was, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I got him to say that this guy wants to make the ETF voluntary, and like I had like 500 followers like the next day. It was sweet. I was like, yeah, hey, man, I don't know. I don't know if the ATF is going to work if we all pay for it. Let's find out. You know, everybody was like, whoa, who's this?
Yeah.
So, yeah, good. I'm very glad that you got a chance chance to listen to some Malice, I would really like to do that in the near future, not to mention it.
Yeah, the new rate's awesome. I mean, it's so jam packed with information, but it's also entertaining because like each page has like two incredibly relevant points, but then he also seems to be entertaining enough to where it's not information overload. And I mean, that's just, not only is that a sign of how crazy the world has been since the 2016 election, but also that's just a sign of a good writer in Malice. And then the same is true with Renegade History, because I know recently I had some Audacity credits and I was like, hey, what book should I get? And everyone was like, New Right and Renegade History. And cool. I listened to the first two chapters, like I said before, of Renegade History, and it's fantastic. It's really good.
Does the New Right have the progressive driving the speed limit in the in it? Is that the actual quote from it?
I think he mentions that.
Because I think of that quote, and this is what I love, right? Whenever somebody comes up with absolute political alchemy, or they come up with some kind of fire way of thinking about the world. When I think every single day I see Republicans driving the speed limit progressively, it's like, dude, I think it every day that he nailed it. He nailed it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do any better. Like, what a god of being a philosopher and a lyricist and a poet.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Michael Malice says some of the most profound stuff, you know?
Yeah, and he couches it in such a, such a snarky, sarcastic way that it blows by, you know, so many people.
Oh, yeah. I love it when, like, people just don't get what's going on Twitter.
Yes. And I was one of those when I was going back and forth with them. I was sort of confused because I was like, I think this guy really likes me, but he's giving me a really hard time. Good. I'm glad you got a little bit of a philosophy in you. So how do you want to move forward now with some new thoughts?
Well, part of it has just made me. And I have by the time this episode's released, my article will be released, but I have an article of kind of about this. I think that people that do not read or that hold very strong political opinions yet have read no political philosophy of any kind, I think that they hurt whatever movement they are in, whether that be libertarianism or like, you know, ANCAPs, where like somebody was convinced.
I mean, ANCAPs are the classic example who read one paragraph and never read a second one in order to make their opinion more palatable.
Yeah, that's why I'm being in Mises has really made me consider myself more of like an Austrian than an ANCAP, because
ooh,
I think
very nice.
I think ANCAPs, more ANCAPs got to where they were through memes than they did literature compared to like Austrians, you know. And I think that I think that and I'm gonna go ahead and tease my favorite line from this article I wrote is it's the quickest that are converted to a movement are the quickest to leave, you know.
And, wow.
I think and reading the New Right, where he talks about, you know, these alt-right types and these white supremacist types and Trump types, where it's a hell of a lot of it is either like flashy sayings from Trump or like kind of bogus little aphorisms and bogus statistics for like the alt-right. You gotta take everything in very skeptically, and you have to read and you can't just build up a better or a thicker believability shield. You know, it's like, yeah, that's interesting and I'm sympathetic, but I need more information to whatever information's coming at you. You know, people are just too gullible and too quick to jump ship to a different ship, you know, and I don't know.
Yeah, and
interesting.
That's kind of, that explains some of that libertarian to alt-right pipeline that people talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
So absolutely. That idea really, really piggybacks quite well off of my idea that that's how I see many Republicans and Democrats, is that they just are a color because that's the way their daddy voted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they're on Facebook spreading just memes about how Obama is Hitler, Trump is God, right? And it's like, how about we do a comparison of policies between the two, Trump and Obama, and ask ourselves, really, what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a danger. That's a dangerous question to ask.
Yeah. I'm losing faith in the public.
Yes, and as you know, that is actually a strong opinion that I've had since day one, and I will repeat it again for the benefit of you and for the mockery of me, which is that there are no stupid people. None. There are no stupid people. Everybody has God-given gifts and talents. And if you go ask anybody, and not in jest, in seriousness, are you an idiot? They will say, no, I'm smart.
Mm.
Now, why do people think that? Because not everybody has the same types of intelligence. And without going into psychology, which I wasted a tremendous amount of time learning about back in formal education, there are different types of intelligence.
Yeah.
And there are many there. To me, I know my type of intelligence. I seem like an idiot to some people who don't embrace or respect the type of intelligence that I think that I have. And consequently, I sometimes think, man, they're so dumb because of reasons X, Y, or Z. But really, it's just me not understanding what gift they have to offer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically in agreement with you on that. I will reserve that. I don't know. Maybe I just think that there are some people who are just as dumb as, you know, a brick.
Yeah, but in the way that you and I are smart, they are dumb. That's fine. But I guarantee you that there's things that they do that if you were around them while doing it and you tried, they'd be like, dude, look at this dummy.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but, you know, that's true enough.
If I could rephrase the counterpoint that I was trying to make, which is that the system is dumb and I'm losing faith in it, is totally cool. You can say that. It's not that the people are dumb. We have a crazy, stupid system of politics and power and coercion that is dumb beyond all belief.
Well, okay, counterpoint. You're saying that, you think that all people, you know, are smart in their own way, to paraphrase, yep. Right? Well, mm-hmm. I see the system as actually well-designed. Because ooh. I have a very cynical view, and maybe I'm a little bit too black-pilled, but to me, it's a very well-designed system to keep people subjugated and divided and controlled.
That is a statement that's been made by other people using different language, but the idea is beautiful, which is the two-party system and the dumb rah-rah encourages people to put on their dumbest hat every day when they're talking about politics.
Yeah. And you know, to your point, like a bunch of the bureaucratic stuff is, you know, like the people involved in that, like they do it poorly. And that part it's designed stupidly, right? But I do think that has a purpose in the overall scheme of things. For
it keeps money flowing to the right people and right organizations because it's so dumb it can't change.
Yeah.
It's organized well in the same way that like a a fungus that like slowly kills an organism, you know, is organized well, or maybe not a fungus, but a bacteria, you know, that
it's a self-replicating organism that is feeding on the environment around it, and nothing will stop it until it consumes all of the food around it.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah, that's really good, dude. You got it. Holy moly. So I am here to deal with the bacteria of politics. I have identified its food, and some of its food I can't do anything about, with, you know, like the dumb rah-rah blue-red. I can't fix it. I'm sorry. Yeah. The part that I can fix is that there are thousands of people that are much smarter, great political capital, fantastic ideas that need to be introduced into the mainstream, not as an L, but an R or a D as part of a caucus. That is how these people need to get their ideas out there. And that will deal with some part that I see as a problem of the bacteria, which is you can't get the good guys in there to start whittling away at the bacteria because the food is just overwhelming any of the parasites that are trying to come in, which in this case would be a third party type of mentality.
Yeah.
I'm going with this. I'm going with this analogy. Dude, this is a good one.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go, guys. That's what I wanted to come and shout about.
Yeah, and you know, as I'm thinking about it, you know, like right now, Cotton and I, like I think Cotton and I kind of work the same in terms of how we like think about stuff, and that we take a little bit of time. Yeah. So, you know, right now I have like the problem is right now I don't like. You've answered my questions, but there are more questions that I will have in a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And like, it's gonna, you know, as I think about it and ruminate on it, it's, you know, something that I'm going to keep thinking like, yeah, it's just going to take some time for me to kind of fully flesh it out in my mind.
It's like a good meal, you know, you got to let the flavors mingle. You got to wait a little while and the 24 hours, you know, and be a hell of a lot better.
Well, I kind of feel bad now that you guys mentioned that you would really rather stew on an idea, because the reason I wanted to spring it on you is because I wanted your honest take, because remember, that's what I'm going to be doing to people, is I'm going to be hitting them with this idea and third parties by the end of the third quarter. And I want to make sure that when you hit somebody with that, what are the types of responses that they make, as opposed to what is your reasons, you've done your research, you looked at the history of candidates that switch from third to a real party, right? I didn't want you to have all the facts. I wanted to get your emotion, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah.
Because normally I detest emotion in politics, and I feel it's one of the things that leads to the bacteria growing, is that people make emotional arguments as opposed to really sitting down and learning about the policies.
No, yeah, I feel that. And, you know, that's kind of one of those things. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of one of the things where I'm not the right person for that, I guess, and that I kind of suppress that initial like reaction.
Yeah,
you know, in order like, because like if I think about stuff long enough, I'll have a question, and then as you heard a few times in this interview, like I'll come up with the answer to my question, you know, given time.
So. And I'm the same way, and that's why me and Zero got married.
All right, so that's the sad what I wanted to tell you guys about. I also have a quick happy at the end here to spin it around, spin this bad boy around, put two hands on the wheel, and ride out on some positive note.
Hell, all right, we have about like maybe 3 or 4 minutes left, so just keep that in mind.
It's a quick hitter. So I have declared victory on Twitter. What do I mean? So I've almost been doing this for 5 years, where I go and find anybody. I search on Twitter things like voluntary taxes, crowdfund government, right? I see who's talking about the idea, and then I jump in from a parachute, and I'm like, voluntary crowdfund government and voluntary taxation. Y'all wrong, right? And I get in these huge 15-person battles with authoritarian collectivists and libertarians alike, to just, you know, just I just want to nuke the whole landscape with my idea.
Yeah.
I have declared victory because I am a very responsive individual to criticism. Basically, if you ever criticize me, I will think about it at 1:30 in the morning a week later. I always will. And I will question whether the criticism was actually correct. And now that I'm at, you know, a bit clearer frame of mind, did they have a point?
Yeah.
I don't know. They didn't have a point. Okay. So I have been waiting for somebody to take me off the ledge of crowdfunding government and say, hey, this is the reason that it's not going to work. And here's a better approach. And then I'll think about it. And I would agree, because you guys realize how much time I waste on this crap?
A lot.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah. I have a lot of hobbies. I have a lot of friends. I have a great job that I can put in extra hours at any point to go make the company more money, and myself more money for that matter. Why would I choose to do this? Well, I think I'm making a difference, and I have declared victory on Twitter because nobody has changed my mind in almost 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now what does that mean? That could mean that I have a blockhead and I'm stupid and I'm incapable of making logical decisions, or I'm incapable of self-reflection and I'm too defensive. That's possible.
And I would have said that if that's what I thought about you.
Okay. And that's fine. Some people do say that. They do say that I'm too stupid to figure it out, that I'm so dumb with this idea. That's fine. Totally cool. I'm okay with that. But here's why I said I won. And here's what I'm going to do about it. And let's get positive at the end of the show. I am done arguing on Twitter. If anybody questions crowdfunding government, if there's a legitimate, super detailed question that indicates they listened to several podcasts and read my blog, I'm going to give them the time of day. But Everybody's questions are so stupid, level one, just like Eric July says, right? So I'm done with it, dude. From now on, no more Twitter arguments. We are replacing Twitter arguments with bad memes. So basically, take the argument, put it on a bad meme, posterize that person, and be done with it. That's Hell what I'm yeah. doing from now on.
I like
because
it.
Because I won. I'm right. And if somebody else is right, they're going to have to prove it to me. And nobody has yet. And I'm done arguing on Twitter. I spend way too much time with sweat on my brow, my thumbs crooked from all this texting, right?
Yeah.
So I'm done. Bad memes are the future. And as you notice, I picked up the shit posting 1,000% this week, and you can expect it to continue because we should have fun on Twitter. We are hanging out with our pals who have also found out the truth, and we're spreading the truth slowly. And you're never going to convince an authoritarian collectivist in a conversation. All you should do is make some fun, make a bad meme. And if you're really my friend, you will make a bad meme about crowdfunded government. So like when I post a podcast, you'll respond with like, and everybody's going to pay to fund government, right? And then just put like a Wojak behind it or something. So if you're my friend, you will make fun of crowdfunding government just like I'm making fun of authoritarian collectivists via bad memes. Because I won, and let's have some fun, boys.
All right. Sounds good.
Hell yeah.
All right, man. Well, we really appreciate you coming on and giving us this your pitch and giving us some stuff to think about. And we'll probably have you on in the future to, you know, ask any more questions that we come up with. And but yeah, we hope you like, you know, we wish you the best, and we look forward to seeing these bad memes.
Yeah.
I love you guys that can already see a few. Bolshido has been killing it. As soon as he and I did his recording, that's why you've seen him. That's why you've seen him just ripping on me the past few days. And it's been like every time I open my phone, I laugh out loud in the office at what he said about crowdfunding government next. It's like, dude, this is exactly what I was talking about. Let's have fun. So, Cotton, congratulations on graduating. I'm looking forward to seeing you making a bigger difference in your new knowledge. Liberty Zero, congratulations on making a huge commitment and helping form a stronger community. And thank you both for allowing me on here.
Well, thank you very much. All right. To wrap it up, I'm Liberty Zero, reminding you to zero your rifle.
And I'm Cotton Archist, reminding you to pick cotton voluntarily. Hey, everybody. We are in this super awesome, dope-ass group of podcasts called The Frat House, which includes
Burning Boots, Punk Rock Libertarians, Dissecting Liberty, Anarchy Proper, The Gaslight Hour,
Sean D. Planet, The Dose, Erase the State, No Real Libertarian, Trent Must Talk, Unshackled Liberty, Laurel and Hardy Across the Pond, and Insurrection, Inc.
And you can find them all at frathousepodcasts.com.